Chapter 11. After fording the Barrow, they travelled steadily east, crossing the Slieacoole and continuing towards the distant hills. "Father Mirko," Oscar asked, "do we have to turn north now to go round the mountains by the Liffey Mouth?" The twins had only a hazy grasp of geography, never having travelled far beyond Ivarca territory. "Would you explain, Fionnthán?" Mirko asked the young driver.
"Certainly, father. This is the route my uncle Phelim showed me when I went to Invernahia with him before. It would be too long to go round by the north. We'd have to spend at least 2 nights on the way. The road we're on takes us through passes in the southern part of the hill country, narrow in places but quite viable in summer."
"Is the monastery at Glendalough far from here?" asked Oscar. "Are we going to spend the night there?"
"We would if we had all the time in the world," Mirko told him. "It's a great monastery with a famous school, as Brother Donnacha knows, he studied there. But it's out of our way. We'd have to double back to the northwest. No, we have to press on."
By now they were leaving behind the level cleared land with its patches of forest and beginning to climb. The winding road led upwards through thick woods with only an occasional open area for grazing, cultivation or dwellings. Now and then, in such places, they could see a scattering of sheep. Once they passed a small flock herded together in a clearing by the road. Two young shepherd boys in tattered grey tunics stared open-mouthed, too shy to return a greeting. The ox cart plodded steadily upwards. After several hours, the road turned northeast. When the silence was broken by the distant howl of a wolf, Oscar and Oisín reached out to check their throwing spears were near at hand. Mirko laughed. "No need to worry about him, lads. There's still plenty of hunting for the wolves on the high slopes. It's in winter they come down looking for a meal." Fionnthán spoke over his shoulder. "Didn't Uncle Phelim kill a wolf in Ardbrecken only a few weeks ago?"
"Yes," said Donnacha, "but that was a lame old loner that couldn't catch deer."
"I once crossed the high country much further north, where it's really mountainous," Mirko told them. "I was alone and on foot, but the only trouble I met was the human kind." So far they had met few people on the road, none of them threatening. A few merchants, one or two travelling craftsmen, and a Brehev with his retinue, on the way, no doubt, to resolve some knotty legal case.
"Father Mirko," called Fionnthán, "do you want to stay the night at that farm I told you about, the one where my uncle and I stayed once? They took very little payment."
"Yes, that would be best, Fionnthán. I'm sure the farm would be more comfortable than those leather tents we packed."
"Right, we should be there fairly soon. By the way, the farmer is called Rory, and he's been to Sleaty once and brought some tools from the twins' father."
"Was he a tall, red-haired man?"
"Yes, I remember him," said Oscar. "He and my father were swapping stories for hours."
"Donnacha," Mirko interrupted, "if you look up to the sky on your right, you'll see a real eagle."
"I see him, father. And," Donnacha added solemnly, "he's neither blue nor red."
The twins looked at each other, puzzled. This must be some strange ecclesiastical code. Later they arrived at a patch of cleared land beside the road. There was pasture with some cattle and sheep, a couple of small fields fenced for crops, a large vegetable garden and an orchard. Soon they could see a substantial dwelling with a grassy space in front. A stream ran down to one side of it, spilling across the road. On the other side, a steep path led up to where a small timber-built chapel was barely visible among the trees. Dogs barked and hens scattered as Fionnthán drew up the ox cart in front of the house. Rory came out, greeted Fionnthán warmly, and told two of his sons to unhitch and feed the oxen. Fionnthán introduced his passengers, but Rory had already guessed who Mirko was. "You must be the master scriptor of Sleaty, Father Mirko from the Coola Coast." Mirko confirmed it. "My facial scar makes it easy to recognise me," he thought. Rory claimed to remember Oscar and Oisín too, but he was particularly delighted that Mirko had come. "We're sincere Christians here, father," he said, "but we haven't seen a priest for 3 years, since our last pastor died in a snowdrift one winter. Would you consider saying Mass in the chapel tomorrow morning? I have custody of the altar vessels, such as they are, and I have bread and wine too." No sooner had Mirko agreed than three of the farmer's numerous children were sent off to inform the neighbours. Inside the house it was warm, smoky and noisy. Children and dogs ran everywhere. A stew pot on the fire gave off enticing savoury smells. The travellers were served stew and bread with mugs of creamy milk. Later, Oscar and Oisín demonstrated spear and sword tricks on the lawn outside, to the fascination of the older boys. Inside, Murchu and Donacha produced waxed tablets, drew animals and birds, and wrote their hosts' names, captivating the wide-eyed younger children. When darkness fell, the family gathered round Fiontán as he told tales of the exploits of Fionn Mac Cumhail. Finally, Oisín sang a lullaby in a fine tenor voice before the guests were escorted to the clean outhouse where they would spend the night. Oscar was taking his bodyguard duties seriously. "We'll keep watch tonight," he announced. "I'll take the first watch, because I'm the eldest, and then I'll wake Oisín for the second watch." The others thankfully wrapped themselves in their cloaks and slept. When Murchu made his way to the little chapel next morning, he was surprised to find over 30 people crammed into it, kneeling on the flagstones. They listened with rapt attention to his brief homily about love of God and love of neighbour. Some wept with joy at the consecration. After Mass, they crowded round Murchu to kiss his hands, which he allowed with some unease and embarrassment. When they were leaving, their host had to be persuaded to accept even a modest payment, saying that he had already been amply recompensed. By now, they had already passed the highest point of their journey. After travelling downhill for some hours, they rounded a bend and were confronted with a magnificent vista, the coastal plain of Kola spread out below them and the ocean beyond. The twins were enthralled. They had never before seen the sea. For Mirko, it was like a homecoming, a bittersweet one. He remembered his beloved wife who had died in the plague and imagined the children they might have had. He thought, too, of his equally beloved father, the master fisherman from the north, a man who could master any skill, rather like Phelim, he realised, and a man who shared his abilities generously and respected the formal learning that he never had a chance to acquire. The settlement around the harbour at Inverness seemed to have grown since Murchu had last seen it. There were several new buildings, the fishing boats were more numerous, and two larger vessels were at anchor. Rowboats were being loaded and unloaded, and people were hurrying about on the shore. Waves slapped against the vessel's wooden sides, shrieking seagulls dipped for fish scraps. Mirko took deep breaths of the salty ocean air. A church stood at the top of the slopes leading down to the harbour. The ox cart halted there while Mirko and Donacha went in. There they found a boy, perhaps a slave, sweeping the floor, supervised by a thin middle-aged priest who was pointing out forgotten corners. The priest greeted them curtly and inquired their business. When told, he shrugged dismissively. "I take little interest in tradition and the past," he said. "My work here takes up all my time in the present." He went on to deny that his church was founded by Palladius, Patrick, or Patrick's disciple, Montan. "I don't know exactly who the founder was, but I'm sure he wasn't one of those." If they wanted to locate scholars dealing with tradition, they should seek out the King of Leinster's officer at the harbour, who took an interest in such matters. Mirko could see that he would get nothing useful from this peevish, dissatisfied cleric, who only wanted to get rid of them. But he did try to draw the priest's attention to the neglected state of Christians in the hill country, only about half a day's journey from there. "Outside my jurisdiction," was the reply, and the most the priest would offer was to mention it to the bishop on his next visit. Neither did he invite them to lodge with him. But when they reached the settlement, where some still remembered Mirko, they were soon offered both food and lodging. Mirko spent the rest of the day finding out about the local political and trading scene.